Hey, Freeman, how are you this afternoon?
Good, Morty. How about you?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for taking the time to tell my audience a little bit about your take on eating disorders, on what you consider emotional eating to be, and some ideas that you have for a possible solution. So just tell me a little bit about your background and your name first, obviously. Your full name, obviously, is Freeman Michaels. And a little bit about your background. How come you're an eating expert, and you know what's your credentials in this area?
You know, it's interesting. I have formal credentials, but I think that the more informal credentials are actually most of what I draw from. So I'll talk about both.
Okay.
I have over 100-pound swing in my adult life from my low weight to my high weight. And I've hit sort of every point, of course, in between. And some of those points I've hit many times. I was a soap opera star in the middle 90s. For people who, the bell, it rings a bell. My name, Freeman Michaels. I played the role of Drake Belson on The Young and the Restless. And I was about 175 pounds at that time. And that was really underweight. I was starving myself, and I was trying to stay thin for the camera. And then I ballooned to about 275, 280 pounds at my highest weight when I was managing, between my partner and I, we were managing about $500 million in real estate development projects. And I was, really stressing out, overeating, drinking too much, especially as the market started to come apart in mid-2007. Like, I landed in the hospital with chest pains and they thought I was having a heart attack. I wasn't. But it was time to take a look at my patterns of behavior around food. That's the way I refer to it, and really go to work. Now, I have a background. I have a master's degree in spiritual psychology from the University of Santa Monica, and I've been around personal growth work for about 20 years. So for me, that was going to be the right approach. I wasn't going to go on another diet. I did plenty of that. And diets are a way of depriving ourselves. I know you're friends with Janine Roth, and I love her book, by the way, Women, Food, and God, which really does a beautiful job of illustrating how we get into these negative patterns where we're reaffirming the negative self-image. And one of the things I say, Morty, that's really important is you can never get to a positive outcome from a negative perspective. In other words, when you look in the mirror and you don't like yourself, if that is the foundation for trying to, in essence, love yourself or make honoring choices, it's not going to work. And I did that for years, and it always meant depriving myself, punishing myself, and then binging and overindulging. So that's sort of the way that I worked for a long time in the unconscious patterns. When I started to work on there's going to be a different way to do this, I started to look at people such as Janine, who at that time only had she didn't have out Women, Food, and God. She had out Emotional Eating, which was a beautiful book. But it wasn't enough. I had to put that and other modalities I'd worked with together and begin to really look at what's going to work for me. And
let me stop you 1 second to get some basics. This is very interesting, but how would you define emotional eating? What is your take on that as an issue?
So for many of us, food is a way that we've learned to cope with stress, anxiety, feelings, and so it's often triggered. It's triggered by some event that occurs that linked to some part of our own experience, where we go into this adaptive pattern. So these patterns have been learned usually at a very young age, which means in a particular way, they're locked in a developmental stage that we never really grew beyond. In fact, I'll reference your work, because I think one of the things, Morty, you do a beautiful job of is you help people dimensionalize the beliefs, help them see these often irrational, often, again, they're very judgmental, they're very developmental, see them dimensionally so that they can unwind them and debunk them in many ways, because a lot of things that are running the show, as it were, these sort of tape loops, in the back of our head, these sort of unconscious ways that we learn to think at very young ages are still directing our choices 10, 20, 30, 40 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important to be able to unwind that patterned thinking, which of course is also patterned behavior. And so in order to do that, there has to be a process of awareness that is founded in compassion. Compassion allows us to see clearly. When we judge, we narrow our perception. That's that fight or flight mechanism. So when we're judging something, it's a defensive way of approaching things. Compassion allows us to open up and take a look at the world in a different way. And when we do that, we begin to see it more dimensionally. We start to realize, oh, that was a place in my history where that was very appropriate. And with that, we can, again, then begin to unwind it. And then we have to go somewhere with it. It's not enough.
Before I get into the solution, I call it emotional eating, and many other people do, because the way I see it, it is eating. The basic issue is eating when you're not hungry, but for emotional reasons. Would you use that term, or is there another? Is that the way you see it, or would you use another term? I've had some people I've interviewed say, I don't consider it emotional eating. I consider it an addiction, something totally different. So how would you describe what we're talking about here?
Well, I'm going to say it both. So, you know, it's habitualized patterns. Most often they're unconscious patterns. So, you know, when we start to recognize... You open Pandora's box because the feelings piece is really tricky. When we talk about food and feelings, one of the things that most people don't recognize is that feelings are separate from the sort of emotional ride that we go on with feelings that's really perpetuated by stories. So the
feelings. You're distinguishing between feelings and emotions?
I am.
Okay, so what's the difference between a feeling and emotion?
Okay, so what happens with children, when you watch children go from happy to sad very quickly. Now I'm speaking of very young children. Mm-hmm. As they get older, that's not true. But you and I have had a wonderful conversation, several actually, about parenting, and your wife, of course, I have as well. And there's an important piece about parenting here, and it relates to parenting the part of us that learned the unconscious eating patterns as well. When my kids come to me and they're upset, I don't ask them what happened. I ask them, what do you need? And when I do that, I get underneath the issue and I allow them to express their feelings without attaching it to a story of someone did something to me or I'm upset because. We want to unwind that I'm upset because stuff, and we want to allow for feelings to be more dynamic as opposed to attached to a story, as opposed to attached to a pattern. See, emotional patterns are like scripts, and once we get into an emotional pattern, we will project it onto all manner of person and circumstances. We get people to play the roles we need to keep the scripts going, and so we want to interrupt that script. We want to interrupt that emotional ride, recognize that there are feelings coming up, and then have somewhere to go with it. That's the big key, and that's where we get into the solution.
What's an emotional... What do you mean by an emotional pattern? I'm still not clear what you mean, the difference between a feeling and an emotion. I know what I mean by it. I'm not sure what the dictionary says, but I'm not clear. What specifically is the difference? I mean, how would you define an emotion and a feeling? Right. Since that seems to be crucial to your approach to eating.
It is. Well, okay, so emotional patterns and emotional scripts. Okay, these are ways that we attach feelings to reasons, or we attach them to events from our past and we ride them into behaviors that may or may not be in our best interest, okay? The feelings, when we allow ourselves to be a feeling human being, we just allow feelings to come up. What happens with feelings as bubbles, they often pop or they float away. They're not... It's the part of us that attaches them to something that then perpetuates the pattern. So we want to allow for feelings without calling them something. We just allow them to come up and be more dynamic. Let me describe it in terms of how we move to self-care practices and pattern interruption practices.
Okay. Could you just give an example of a feeling and an emotional pattern?
Well, it's that sentence, I'm upset because... If we're starting to feel some, let's call it upset, it could be a fear-based upset, like, oh, I'm scared something's going to mm-hmm. happen, then we can go into all manner of future fantasizing of a negative outcome, of a negative possibility, and then our heart rate rises, and then we're all frazzled, And the truth is, nothing's actually occurred. Mm-hmm. And the chances of that exact potentiality playing out is probably quite slim.
Mm-hmm.
If we fixate on it, we increase the chances of it playing out that mm-hmm. way. So we recognize we just went on a ride. And all that happened is we had an experience of fear come up or anxiety come up. So the big trick is to be okay with the part of us that gets scared and to have some place to go. Self-soothing practices, self-care practices, pattern interruption practices. This is what I help people with so that when they experience a trigger, they don't go on the ride. They go, wow, and as quickly as they can become aware that they've been triggered. And this has to do with really having a relationship with ourselves and having a relationship with our bodies. For a lot of us, and I'll raise my hand on this one, you know, I went to my head to be safe. So to get back in my body and to feel myself in my body is a challenge. So I've created practices to ground myself, to stay rooted in my body, to check in with my stomach, especially around eating. So there's a lot of practices about how I want to be in relationship with food that then gets expressed as what we call ritualized practices around eating. And I even like the word sacred, that if I can make them sacred, if I can ritualize my experience with eating so that it becomes a way that I'm fueling something that I want to have more of in my life versus feeding an
unconscious. So that sounds good. So give me an example. So the way I see it is, which is similar, is that certain emotions act as triggers. They're uncomfortable. We don't want to feel it. So if we're feeling bored or depressed or unloved or anxious, when that comes up, if we eat, that seems to diminish that negative feeling for a while. So I would say that the emotion has become conditioned as a trigger to force us to eat. Now, what do you do? What is your approach then if somebody is having these negative feelings? And I would say they're conditioned, but however you would describe, they're having these feelings, and that leads them to eat. What do you do to get people to not eat when they're having feelings that are sort of driving them to eat? What approach do you use?
Part of the inquiry is recognizing when these experiences, these emotional conditioned triggers, tend to occur. So we actually want to structure our lives in such a way that we take care of ourselves on a regular basis. Again, I'm calling it a self-care practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have an awareness that allows us to make these choices consistently. But that doesn't mean that we still won't be triggered. Of course we will. So again, the conscious, compassionate observer developing this way of recognizing what's coming up for us, watching ourselves as we're moving into, you know, what might be an unhealthy habit or pattern, and then interrupting it, having an outlet, a place to go, a practice, whether it's a clearing breath practice or a self-soothing practice or, I take it for a walk practice. If things are, if I'm feeling a lot of anxiety, I say I'm taking my anxiety for a walk and not to the cupboard, by the way,
mm-hmm.
around the block or something. So there's a way of interrupting the pattern in a very gentle, very compassionate way, as opposed to going unconscious and then beating ourselves up for downing a pint of ice cream or, whatever, a half a gallon of
so if, yeah. So if I understand you, repeat it back and let me know if this is accurate. It sounds what you're saying then is when we notice that we feel triggered, that there's some belief or conditioning that is moving us to eat, you have practices, ways of other things you can do that will relieve that need to eat that's other than eating.
Absolutely. And there's a critical component, which is that we begin to orient towards what we do want. It's having a sense of vision, having a sense of where we want to direct our energy, and what we, that we have things that really feed us. So, interesting enough, one of the practices is a creative self-expression practice, and it's amazing, Morty. I found this part to be critical, that people have some way of expressing themselves that's constructive. It helps build a level of self-esteem, of self-love, of self-acceptance, that these are outlets, because we want to be aware of what we've been feeding. And a lot of times, we've been feeding a negative impression of ourselves. So we have to begin to build off of how we want to be in relationship with our body, and what practices are we going to create to express that, how we want to be in relationship with food, and what practices we're going to build to express that, how we want to be in relationship with exercise. What are the outlets for me? And then if we can create an imperative, that imperative is that sense of soul purpose, and that's spelled both ways, S-O-U-L and S-O-L-E, that then begins to direct our choices. That is very empowering, and that we want to feed that, but we don't want to feed the negative self-perception.
And how do people find out about these different practices? Have you written these down in some form?
Well, I gave you a copy of my book, mm-hmm. So there's a 250-page book. There's also a 125-page workbook, and then there's my program. And so, if folks are interested in this, they can go to eatingreport.com/wellbeing. Again, that's eatingreport.com/wellbeing, and they can look at all of the materials involved in my program itself. It's a 9-week program with some wonderful bonus people. Morty, you're going to be one of our bonus people talking specifically about beliefs to help them really approach this in a different way, a substantive way, that's not a diet, it's not about deprivation, it's about making positive choices towards the life you do want to lead, and cleaning up all the bits and pieces of beliefs, of patterning, that get in the way of going where you want to go.
Oh, great. And what's the name of the book? If somebody wants to take a look at your book along the way, where can they find the book?
It's called Weight Release, A Liberating Journey. And, of course, it's available at Amazon and
Weight Release, A Liberating Journey by Freeman Michaels. And, obviously, that's at Amazon or any other big bookstore. So they can start with that. Now, what's the workbook? Where does that fit in?
The workbook is only through the program. So when people do my program, there's a workbook that accompanies it, and we take them through it in 9 weeks. That's beginning to end, from start to finish, and we go through a bunch of exercises that help reveal some of the programs and patterns that are underneath, mm-hmm. get them up to the surface in a very compassionate, loving way, and find constructive ways to meet those beliefs and ideas head on, and then begin to develop practices that give us more constructive outlets.
Okay, very good. Anything else? I think we got a pretty good sense for my audience. Is there anything else specifically you'd like to say about your take on emotional eating, overeating, and or your approach to it, or how it compares to other people? What's the difference between your system and the many other systems that are out there that you know about?
I think that whether people utilize my system or they find another system, the critical component is it a compassionate program? Is it bigger than just the patterns? If it's just about food and exercise, it's going to be a miss, because this is deeper than that. And there's a tremendous opportunity in looking at our relationship with food, our relationship with exercise, that allows us to grow and transform, and that's the bigger offer. So again, whether it's my program or someone else's program, that's the critical component versus going towards deprivation and trying to fix it or solve it.
So it sounds like there's a spiritual component to this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good. So again, people can find information about your program at eatingreport.com/wellbeing. Wellbeing is one word. And your book is available, obviously, on Amazon. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate your sitting in and giving us this background. I hope people check out your program and your book. And there's been a lot of very useful information in the interview itself. So
thanks,
it's great having you, and look forward to talking to you real soon.
All right. Take care now.